In this session, we will look at entrepreneurs' relief. Entrepreneurs' relief is the CGT relief available to taxpayers who sell or give away their businesses. The relief is available where there is either a material disposal of business assets or a disposal which is associated with a material disposal or a disposal of trust business assets. We will consider trust disposals in another module. In most instances, entrepreneurs' relief will be available to sole traders and partners selling the whole or part of their businesses. This will include furnished holiday lettings and company directors and employees who sell a material stake in a qualifying company. A material stake means that the shareholder works for the company and is able to exercise at least 5% of the voting rights. We'll look at the detailed conditions later. Entrepreneurs' relief is not given automatically. It must be claimed by the taxpayer no later than the first anniversary of the 31st of January following the tax year of disposal. Therefore, for disposals in 2010-11, the relief must be claimed no later than the 31st of January 2013. Before we look at the conditions for the relief, we'll first get ourselves comfortable with the basic computational aspects. The aim of entrepreneurs' relief is to reduce the rate of capital gains tax paid by taxpayers on qualifying disposals to 10%. Gains are eligible for entrepreneurs' relief up to a maximum lifetime limit, which is currently £5 million. We'll discuss this later. As a result of changes to the rate at which capital gains tax is paid following the second budget of 2010, the manner in which the relief is given changed for disposals occurring on or after the 23rd of June 2010. For disposals taking place before the 23rd of June 2010, relief is given by reducing qualifying gains by 4/9. The remaining 5/9 of the gain is treated as a normal gain, and ignoring any available annual exemption, is charged at 18%, giving an effective rate of 10%. For example, Ian Robinson is the managing director and sole shareholder of Ganymede Limited, a small printing company. On the 1st of June 2010, he sold his shares in the company, making a gain of £720,000. He also sold a painting on the 15th of June, making a gain of £36,000. Ian had not previously made any disposals qualifying for entrepreneurs' relief. His taxable income for 2010-11 was £25,000. We start with the gain on sale, which is £720,000. As Ian has sold the shares in his company, he is making a material disposal, which qualifies for entrepreneurs' relief. As the disposal occurred before the 23rd of June 2010, relief is obtained by reducing the gain by 4/9. The relief is therefore £320,000, leaving the remaining 5/9, that is £400,000, chargeable to tax. We then add the gain on the painting to give total chargeable gains of £436,000. From this, we deduct the annual exemption of £10,100 to give taxable gains of £425,900. As the disposal took place before the 23rd of June 2010, the gains are taxed at 18%, giving a liability of £76,662. For disposals on or after the 23rd of June 2010, relief is given by taxing gains qualifying for entrepreneurs' relief at a flat rate of 10%, regardless of whether the taxpayer has any unused basic rate band. When determining the rate of tax payable in respect of other gains, gains eligible for entrepreneurs' relief, which are subject to tax at 10%, are treated as using up any unused basic rate band before other gains. Let us revisit our example of Ian Robinson, but this time assuming that the disposals of the shares took place on the 1st of July 2010 and the disposal of the painting on the 15th of July 2010. The gain on the shares is eligible for entrepreneurs' relief and therefore is taxed at 10%. The gain on the painting is reduced by the annual exemption, as this gain will be taxed at a higher rate. Although the level of Ian's income means that some of the basic rate band is unused, this is used up by the taxable gains eligible for entrepreneurs' relief, Therefore, the remaining gain on the painting is taxed at 28%, giving Ian a total capital gains tax liability of £79,252. One downside of entrepreneur's relief is that it can only be claimed in respect of capital gains up to a certain lifetime limit. Individuals can claim relief for gains on multiple occasions until this limit is reached. Gains which exceed the lifetime limit are simply taxed as normal gains. Any gains made before the 6th of April 2008 do not affect the lifetime limit. The situation is made more complicated due to the fact that we have had three different lifetime limits since 2008, with two limit changes taking place in 2010-11. For disposals prior to the 6th of April 2010, the lifetime limit on qualifying gains was £1 million. For disposals between the 6th of April 2010 and the 22nd of June 2010, the limit was increased to £2 million. For disposals occurring on or after the 23rd of June 2010, the limit is £5 million. In order to calculate the amount of qualifying gains eligible for relief in respect of each disposal, the cumulative total of gains which have obtained relief must be deducted from the lifetime limit at the date of disposal to see if any of the lifetime limit remains. If an individual has made a gain which exceeded the lifetime limit at the date of disposal, no additional relief will be available for the excess gain as a result of the lifetime limit subsequently increasing. However, if further qualifying gains are made after the lifetime limit has increased, further relief will be available in respect of the later gains. Let us illustrate this by way of an example. Ellen owns and runs Chalice Limited, a manufacturing company. On the 1st of August 2010, she sold her shares in the company, making a gain of £4,380,000, which qualifies for entrepreneur's relief. Her only other disposal in 2010-11 was the sale of a vase, which resulted in a chargeable gain of £9,600. Ellen had claimed entrepreneur's relief in 2008-09 on a qualifying chargeable gain of £1,240,000. Ellen's taxable income for 2010-11 was £67,000. The lifetime limit on gains eligible for relief was £1 million in 2008-09. Therefore, £240,000 of the previous gain would not have obtained relief. The relief available in respect of the 2008-09 disposal is not increased as a result of the increase in the lifetime limit in 2010-11. When calculating the amount of qualifying gain eligible for relief in 2010-11, the earlier gain which obtained relief of £1 million is deducted from the current lifetime limit of £5 million. This means that a further £4 million of gain is eligible for relief in 2010-11. Therefore, £380,000 of the gain on the shares is not eligible for entrepreneur's relief. The total gains not qualifying for entrepreneur's relief will suffer tax at a higher rate, so the annual exemption is deducted from these gains, giving taxable gains of £379,500. The gain of £4 million eligible for entrepreneur's relief is taxed at 10%. The other gains are taxed at 28%, giving a total liability of £506,260. We will now turn our attention to the type of disposals qualifying for entrepreneur's relief. Entrepreneur's relief is essentially available to taxpayers who make a material disposal of business assets. A business asset means A. the whole or part of a sole trade or partnership business, or B. a disposal of an asset used in a business at the time the business ceases to be carried on, or C. a disposal of shares or securities in a company. In the case of a disposal of a sole trade or partnership business, the individual must be disposing of the whole or part of his business. Therefore, the disposal of a single asset used in that business will not qualify for entrepreneur's relief. A material disposal is defined as follows. In the case of the disposal of a sole trade or partnership business, material means that the business must have been owned by the taxpayer for at least 1 year prior to the disposal. Entrepreneur's relief is only given in respect of relevant business assets. These are assets used for the purpose of the business at the time the business is disposed of. This will generally mean business premises, goodwill, plant, etc., but not shares or other assets held for investment purposes. Note that gains and losses on relevant business assets must be aggregated in order to find the net gain eligible for relief. In the case of the disposal of an asset used in a business at the time of cessation, material means that the business must have been owned by the taxpayer for at least 1 year prior to cessation, and the asset must be sold within 3 years of the cessation. In the case of the disposal of shares or securities in a company, material means that for at least 1 year prior to the disposal, 1. The company is the taxpayer's personal trading company, i.e., the company must be trading and the taxpayer must have at least 5% of the ordinary shares and voting rights of the company, and 2. The taxpayer must work for the company or for another company in the same group. There is no minimum hour stipulation, so full or part-time employees or directors will be eligible. Note therefore that the sale of securities, i.e. loan stock, etc., in a company will be eligible for relief, but this will only be the case where the loan stock is in a company in which the taxpayer also has at least 5% of the ordinary shares. A disposal of furnished holiday lettings will be eligible for entrepreneurs' relief. However, a disposal of general let properties, for example, residential dwellings, commercial investment property, etc., will not qualify. Entrepreneurs' relief is only available to taxpayers who sell shares in a trading company or the holding company of a trading group. A trading company is a company carrying on trading activities whose activities do not include to a substantial extent activities other than trading activities. The key word in the definition is the word substantial, which is clearly a subjective phrase and open to differing interpretations. HMRC consider substantial to mean more than 20%. The question is, more than 20% of what? The 20% test is applied to a number of different criteria depending on the facts and circumstances of each case. These criteria are turnover, the asset base or balance sheet of the company, and directors' time and expenses. Looking first at turnover. If more than 20% of the turnover of a company is typically made up of investment income, i.e. not trading income, the non-trading activities could be said to be substantial, and the company would fail to satisfy the definition of a trading company. HMRC has said that it will not seek to apply the test if the company had a particularly poor trading year, such that in an isolated period, investment income made up an unusually large percentage of total income. Here, HMRC would look at the history of the company and take a more balanced view. As far as the asset base or balance sheet of the company is concerned, if non-trading assets, such as investment properties, shares, etc., make up more than 20% of the value of the total assets of the company, again, this could be taken to mean that non-trading activities are substantial. Current market value and amounts given by way of consideration for assets may be appropriate measures. Which measure is appropriate will depend on the facts in each case. Again, this begs several questions, such as, what is an investment property? For example, if surplus business premises are being temporarily sublet, does this constitute an investment asset for the purposes of the 20% test? The answer to this question is probably no, although each case should be looked at on its own merit. HMRC also recognised that intangible assets, most notably goodwill, which are not always reflected on the balance sheet, may have to be taken into account when applying the 20% rule. If a substantial part of a director's time or a substantial proportion of expenses are incurred on non-trading activities, this could again lead to HMRC concluding that the company is not trading. If a shareholder is uncertain as to whether the company in which he or she holds shares is or is not a trading company, HMRC advice is for the shareholder to contact the company in the first instance and ask. If no answer is obtained, i.e. the company simply does not know, the shareholders should submit their tax returns using their own judgment. Associated disposals will also qualify for entrepreneur's relief. An associated disposal is where a taxpayer makes a material disposal of a business or shares in a company and, as part of the withdrawal of the individual from the business, he makes a disposal of an asset which had been used in that business and the asset disposed of had been used in that business for at least 1 year. For example, assume a company director owns at least 5% of the shares of a company. He also owns the premises from which the company trades. If he sells the building at the same time as he sells the shares, this will be an associated disposal and will be eligible for entrepreneur's relief. An associated disposal will also include a situation where a partner sells his interest in a partnership and also sells an asset he owns personally but which is used in the partnership's trade. Note here that the associated disposal rules cannot apply to sole traders. If a sole trader sells his business but still retains an asset, for example a building, which was being used in the trade, entrepreneur's relief will be available if the trader disposes of the asset within 3 years of cessation. Also, the associated disposal rules cannot apply to isolated disposals of assets. The disposal must be associated with something, i.e. the disposal of the business in which the asset was being used. Entrepreneur's relief on an associated disposal is restricted if the asset had not been used in the business throughout its period of ownership, or if only part of the asset had been used in the business. By way of illustration, Marcus Hollis is a full-time director and 20% shareholder of TalkTalk Limited, a mobile phone company. On the 15th of March 2011, he retired and sold his shares in the company, making a gain of £420,000. Marcus also owned the shop from which the company has been trading. He had originally bought the shop in April 2001 for £100,000 as an investment. TalkTalk Limited started trading on the 1st of April 2004 and from that date onwards has traded from Marcus's shop. The shop was sold by Marcus for £400,000 on the 31st of March 2011. Marcus's taxable income for 2010-11 was £120,000. The gain on the sale of the shares will qualify for entrepreneur's relief. The gain on the sale of the shop will also be eligible for relief as it is an associated disposal. Marcus's CGT due is as follows. He sold the shop for £400,000. We deduct his base cost of £100,000 to give a gain of £300,000. The gain on the sale of his shares is £420,000. The gain on the shares will qualify for entrepreneur's relief as Marcus has at least 5% of the shares and works for the company. The sale of the shop is an associated disposal because, as part of his withdrawal from the business, Marcus is disposing of an asset which had been used in that business. However, the shop had only been used by TalkTalk Limited for part of its period of ownership, so some of the gain of £300,000 will not qualify for entrepreneur's relief. Marcus owned the shop between April 2001 and the 31st of March 2011, i.e. for 10 years. The shop had been used by the company between April 2004 and March 2011, i.e. for 7 years. Therefore, only 7/10 of the gain on the associated disposal will qualify for relief. We therefore deduct 3/10, leaving a qualifying gain of £210,000. Total gains eligible for entrepreneur's relief are therefore £630,000. The gain of £90,000 not eligible for entrepreneur's relief will be taxed at 28%. So the annual exemption is deducted here in priority in order to minimise the overall liability. The remaining gain of £79,900 is taxed at 28%, giving a liability of £22,372. The gain of £630,000 qualifying for entrepreneur's relief is taxed at 10%. The total liability is therefore £85,372.